This is Active Lehigh Valley on 88.1 WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Welcome to Active Lehigh Valley, generously supported by our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network. Our aim is to encourage listeners to be happy, healthy, and active, and I'm your host, Mike Dravenstadt. I'm here with Adam Fairchild, the owner of Easton Outdoor Company. On Northampton Street in downtown Easton, it's just east of Center Square. Adam, welcome to WDIY and Active Lehigh Valley.
Thanks, Michael. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so we're recording this in November, and winter's on the way.
Yep.
We want to get our listeners ready and encourage them to stay active, even as everything gets colder. And so I was preparing for this, I kind of thought to an adage I've heard before, which is there's no such thing as bad weather, just wrong gear. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say. I think a category that some people fall into is spring comes around and people get excited to get outside for the season, and they do. But it's kind of mixed with some cold weather and some rain still. So people are a little tentative, or they're getting out, but maybe not as much as they'd like to. And then late spring rolls around, summertime, early summer. So people are going after it hard. They're getting outside, getting those days in when they can, especially when the weather's really nice. And then the dead of summer hits and it's hot and people maybe pull back a little bit and they don't want to get out as much. And then late summer hits and early fall hits and we're getting back out there, right? Winter comes around and it's like, ooh, now I'm going to stay inside. What can I do outside? Do I even want to be outside? So I think we find a lot of this turning the tap on and off through the seasons, depending on the weather and depending on the seasons, because we're like, well, it's cold now or it's rainy now and I can't really do anything outside, which is really not true at all.
Right. So. And I guess overall, why is good winter gear important? Why can't you just layer up on sweatpants and some sweatshirts?
I guess you could, really. But to be honest with you, you're not going to be as comfortable. You're not going to be able to maybe be out as long as you might like. So sweatpants and sweatshirts are made of cotton. Cotton is usually, typically, our enemy when it comes to sweating, when it comes to being outside for longer periods of time, when it comes to insulate or having a thermal capability of keeping you warm. So we try to avoid those types of things. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into more of this later.
Yeah, so that's actually going to talk about just general concepts. And I think one of the concepts would be stay away from cotton.
Yeah,
right?
Yep.
What about some of the other concepts, things like layering and maybe the how you would equip yourself based on what the temperature is or what your activity is?
Yeah, so layering is what I would think is one of the most important things you can do if you want to go outside and let's say it's a little cold or it is cold, or you know, maybe it's a little wet outside or it's going to be raining. Layering is the thing that you can do that is really going to allow you to get outside and stay outside for as long as you want. So layering really consists of, the way I look at it simply, is three layers. So you have your base layer, which is your first layer that you put on your body. And usually that base layer should be of a couple of different qualities. It should be sweat wicking. So if you are doing a highly aerobic or high intensity activity, it will help wick the sweat so that the moisture isn't right next to your body, okay? And then it should also have a thermal capability, especially if you were doing anything in the cold or wintertime. So that's going to help insulate you and keep you warm. So that's base layer. The second layer would be what we would just refer to as a mid layer. So that's like a fleece, kind of a mid-weight fleece that you could work into the three layers. That's going to allow you to, if needed, peel that off or put that back on as you go throughout your day. So if you're going to be out there for hours on end and it's cold in the morning and then it warms up in the maybe late morning, early in the afternoon, then you can peel that off if you need to. So the outer layer then, the final layer, would be something that would protect you from cold. It's going to protect you from the elements like snow or rain. So it's going to be waterproof. It's going to be insulated in some cases. So that's going to be kind of your last layer that you can peel on and off or not even bring in certain cases, depending on what the weather is. So, but those would really be the things you'd want to think about from layering, is base layer, mid layer, outer layer.
And even with that mid layer, as I'm thinking about it, you talked about different times of day, maybe when the sun is out or the sun is going down.
Yeah.
That even could be based on the activity. Like if you're doing a nice, you know, 1,000 foot, 1,500 foot ascent, your body's going to warm up.
Yeah.
And you might not need all the thermal qualities of that mid layer,
right,
as opposed to when you're heading level or going down.
Yeah. And from that perspective, yes, but also just the perspective of whatever the activity is. So if you are running or you're cycling and you're going to be generating a lot of body heat and it's going to be a lot more highly aerobic, yes, to your point, you might not need that piece, or that piece could be much thinner or much lighter. Whereas if you're just hiking or you're just out for a walk with the dog, maybe that's something different. Maybe that's something a little bit warmer or something that you're going to want to make sure you have with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about base layers, I mean, automatically I'm thinking, you know, some sort of like long sleeve layer, but also base layer can apply to undergarments and legs and things like that, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So bottoms, tops, yeah. Base layer could even be as simply like underwear. So underwear we describe as base layers. That's, again, going to be your first layer. And it would be something that would be synthetic, or it's going to wick sweat, especially if you're going to be in those more highly aerobic activities. But traditionally speaking, base layer is going to be, let's say, a long sleeve first layer and a set of tights as your first layer. And typically they're made of synthetic materials. So again, not cotton. Avoid cotton. Cotton is the enemy.
Right.
So yeah, it's going to be synthetic, which is going to help wick sweat. So I talked about wicking sweat, and what does that really mean? So sweat wicking fabric, what it's there to do is it draws the moisture as you're sweating from the inner part of the fabric to the outer part of the fabric, okay, where it can more quickly dry. So that moisture isn't sitting directly next to your skin. So it's going to avoid chafing, blisters, things like that, but also just keep you more comfortable at the end of the day.
Well, that moisture can also chill if it's right up next to your skin as well,
right,
correct?
Right. Yeah. So once you stop the activity or slow down, then that body temperature is going to come down and then you're going to get cold. And what we don't want you to do is have that moisture directly next to your skin, like if you're wearing a cotton t-shirt.
Right. That's what I was going to say with cotton. Essentially, cotton's kind of like a towel.
Yeah.
Where it absorbs all that, and just think of a towel getting all wet. Do you want a wet, cold towel wrapped around your middle?
You absolutely don't.
No, definitely
yeah.
not. You were talking about the outer layer, and let's talk a little bit more about what features those might have in terms of both thermal properties and either water resistance or water repellent. What should people be looking for, and what are the options?
Yeah, so it really depends on the weather. There are things that are combo of waterproof and insulated, but in a lot of more high-intensity activity, you might not have something that's both like that. So typically it's going to be an insulating outer layer, or it's going to be a waterproof mm-hmm. outer layer. So to your point, the waterproof versus water resistant, it's very different, right? So sometimes it's hard to tell. And you need to be able to speak with somebody that can appropriately educate you on what that product is at the end of the day if you go into your local outfitter. So a outer layer that is waterproof means that it has a waterproof membrane, and water obviously cannot get through that membrane. But all the seams, anywhere where they're stitching, they're taped with that same kind of membrane, so that anywhere where a needle punctured that fabric, underneath, under the underlying layer is going to be taped as well. So that means it's going to be fully waterproof. Okay. Water resistant just means a couple things. Either it does have that waterproof membrane and it's not taped, or it doesn't even have the waterproof membrane. It's just a fabric like a nylon or something like that that's been treated with a coating that will help water kind of shed off of the outer part of that fabric. Now, ultimately, if you're in a heavy rain, or if you're in a lot of moisture, or if you've been using that piece for a long time, those coatings wear off, and either you need to retreat them, or you're going to get stuck out there, and you're going to end up getting wet.
I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of these things break down. Like all of these materials, even the waterproof membranes, eventually break down, and they do stop working, and then we have to get a new piece of gear to kind of upgrade to keeping us dry, right? So.
Well, with the waterproof membranes as well, there needs to be some technology that still allows that to be breathable, right?
I mean,
if there's moisture coming and wicking away from your body, we still need to get that moisture as much as possible to the outside.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of water vapor within the jacket that is trying to escape. And because it's waterproof and it doesn't allow water through, it doesn't allow water vapor out very easily. Now, there are membranes out there, Gore-Tex is one of them, that will say we have the most breathable waterproof membrane on the planet. And they might, and perhaps they do. However, waterproof membranes are not very breathable. If you're going to keep your body dry from, let's say, rain or other types of moisture from the outside, you're most likely going to be wet from the inside from sweat. So it is a trade-off with that type of layer that, yes, I'm going to stay dry, but I'm also going to sweat in it, and it's going to kind of harbor that sweat within the fabric. So I have to think about what I really want the most protection from.
Right, because it has to be difficult to design something that will let moisture out but not let it in.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it just seems counterintuitive.
It is. By and large, it is counterintuitive, and it doesn't necessarily work the way you would want it to. However, you have to think about that when you're going to be going out, whether you're cycling or running or hiking or whatever, to think about what's the most important thing here that I'm, you know, is there inclement weather? If there's not, I don't really need this thing. Maybe I could use it for wind protection instead of maybe water protection.
In fact, I was going to ask that about wind protection, because sometimes, you know, you might be out in the cold weather and it feels okay, but then 25 mile an hour wind, really significant, chill things down. Are there things in gear specifically designed to protect you from the wind?
Well, it's exactly the day we're having today. It's 15 to 25 mile an hour winds out there. And I actually was out with my dog earlier, and I was on the DNL trail, and I know it's near and dear to your heart.
Of course.
So we were out there, and I said, what do I want to bring with me that's going to help protect me from the wind? So anything that's insulated really is going to give you wind protection, whether it's down or synthetic insulation. It's naturally going to be a wind barrier. Waterproof fabrics also are a natural wind-resistant barrier or fabric. So those types of things you can think about. Obviously, if you're going to be out there and you're going to be running or cycling and generating a lot of heat and sweat, you're going to want to have something lighter in weight, and you're going to still be able to get that wind protection, but it's not going to be this heavy, let's say, rain jacket or even down piece that you really don't need to wear.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would think also for some activities, if you got a pack on or you're biking, sometimes the packability of that outer layer might be important too. How small can you get it?
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So typically, you know, there are shells or rain shells out there that are going to be two or three layer shells, and I'm getting a little more technical here, and I can jump into that if you want me to, but they're going to be lighter weight shells ultimately that you can pack, roll up, and they can get pretty small, and it can just easily go into a backpack. You don't necessarily want to be bringing a parka with you or some type of heavy lined jacket that is going to be bulky, not only heavy on your body, but also just bulky to carry around.
Let's maybe shift away from those layers and talk about headgear for a little bit. And I'm flashing back to my grandmother back in the day saying, oh, your head is your chimney.
Yeah.
To what extent is that true? And what sort of options are there for headwear to kind of stay warm?
You are going to lose a lot of heat through your head, for sure. So if you want to be able to retain some of that warmth, you put a hat on. And hats come in all kinds of shapes and sizes. And there are hats out there. So again, for a more highly aerobic activity, you're going to get maybe a thinner, more sweat-wicking hat that you can be comfortable in. It's going to retain some warmth, but it's not going to allow you to overheat either. So it really is going to be activity dependent is how you're going to choose your hat ultimately. So you're going to be slower out there, maybe hiking on the trail, get a little bit thicker, a little bit warmer hat. And thickness applies to warmth. So the thicker the hat, the warmer it's generally going to be. Thinner, it's not going to retain as much heat.
And so, I've even found too, if I know I'm going to be climbing up a mountain or something like that, even a headband, kind of letting some of the heat come off my head. And then on the way down, hey, I'll put that beanie on.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And the headband would be great because it's going to give your ears protection where you're not getting a lot of blood flow to begin with. So those are going to get colder. But the head, to your point, allows a lot of that heat to kind of dissipate.
Yeah. So we're going to take a short break here. This is Active Lehigh Valley. We're talking with Adam Fairchild from the Easton Outdoor Company about winter gear. We'll be right back.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m., Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Active Lehigh Valley, generously supported by our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network. We're here today with Adam Fairchild, the owner of Easton Outdoor Company in Easton, of course, and we're talking about gear for the winter and colder months. And we just got done talking about headgear. I'm thinking about other extremities, specifically hands. Mm-hmm. I know with me, my hands get cold in a hurry.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people do. And that's something that if they get cold, it's tough to warm them back up. What gear is in place or what gear is available to keep our hands warm?
So gloves, again, kind of like hats, come in all shapes and sizes and thicknesses. And again, geared towards the activity that you're doing. So you can get very thin gloves. So when you're out there and again, generating a lot of heat, you don't need much and the hands are going to probably warm up because you are, you know, creating a lot of body heat. So you just need just a little protective layer, right? It's going to protect from the wind, from a little bit of that chill. So you can get a thinner glove, like a fleece glove. Okay. North Face makes them, Smart Wool, many brands make them. You can then kind of start to go up from there and get lighter insulation gloves. So it actually has a bit of an insulation layer to it. And then you can get all the way up to ski gloves, obviously, if you really need protection and you're out there on the trail and you're not necessarily skiing with them, but it really depends on the person at the end of the day, I think. So it depends on activity and it depends on the person because some people's extremities get colder than others. So yeah, there's plenty of things out there. When you come into a shop like mine, we can talk about like ultimately what's your activity, what's your personal situation as far as how cold or how warm you get. And then we kind of push you into like one track or another as far as gloves go.
Yeah. Now, is layering also a possibility, just like you would do for other body parts?
You can, yeah. There are essentially liner gloves that would fit in other gloves. So that's a consideration for some people, for sure.
And also mittens just aren't for little kids anymore too, no. Right? I found that mittens kind of keep my hands warmer when it's colder out there, keeps the fingers closer together sometimes.
Yeah, naturally, your natural body heat between your fingers is going to help warm them. And then you have that whole mitten surrounding the hand that's going to trap in all of that heat as well. Yeah. So
let's kind of move away from the hands and talk about the feet.
Okay.
Granted, we can probably talk for 30 minutes about footwear and yeah. everything that's appropriate, but is there different footwear that is better for colder weather than you might use in the spring or summer like we were talking about before?
Well, yeah, there's insulated footwear. There's insulated boots that you can wear they make them specific for hiking. They make them just to be insulated out walking around, whether you're walking the dog or shoveling snow. So they'll be waterproof. They'll be insulated. They'll keep your feet nice and warm. And there's different levels of insulation. So typically what you're going to find in a general insulated boot on the market is going to be what's called a 200 weight or 200 grams of insulation. Now, when you go up from there, you can get 400 grams. You can get, there are hunting boots with 1,000 grams or even more of insulation. So it really depends again on what your movement is going to be. Are you sitting around? Are you at a football game? Are you sitting in a hunting stand? Are you not really generating a lot of body heat? The more insulation, the better for those situations. If you are moving, you're getting on the trail, you can deal with less insulation because you're generating, again, a lot of body heat that's going to help with that. So,
okay. And then socks along with that, but no cotton.
Yeah, I would, avoid cotton, but you can use natural materials like wool, right? So they have plenty of wool socks that are blended with synthetics. So it's going to give you that sweat wicking because of the synthetic, but it gives you that natural fiber that's going to help insulate the foot. And don't avoid wool in the summertime either. Wool's fine in the summertime. It has the ability to kind of regulate the temperature of your foot. So I'll wear wool in the summer and winter alike. So
how has gear evolved over time to accommodate electronics? I know I've seen things with, you know, gloves that have a little pad that allows you to touch a phone or an iPad or pockets that accommodate things. What have you seen over the last maybe 10 or 15 years?
Yeah, to your point, I think where we've seen this the most is in gloves and the touchscreen capability. I mean, I see ski mitts, and I don't know how they can do it, but I see ski mitts, a thick fingered ski mitt be able to do touchscreen on the phone. So somehow it's picking up that heat generation from your finger through the glove, through all of that insulation and through that waterproof barrier onto the phone so that you could use your phone with the glove still on your hand. So yes, that stuff exists out there a lot. And by and large, most of the gloves that I see out there, at least the ones that we sell, have this touchscreen capability, which is pretty interesting. Is the dexterity or is the accuracy as great on the phone? No, it's not going to be, you know, like your bare finger. But it is interesting. And, you know, you bring up jackets. They make little pockets now on the inside. So if you want to have your phone in there and you can run a cord through, they have little like areas where you can pull the cord through and pull it up, you know, through the collar, you know, so you can have it out on your ear and you can talk to people and it's a little more comfortable and your phone's not out and exposed. It's just tucked away in your pocket.
Right. So, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then also something I was thinking about, you know, we think about the summer sun and, you know, things being really bright, but on a winter day with a lot of snow on the ground, eye protection too.
Yeah.
With things reflecting up, correct?
Yeah.
Sunglasses.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've heard of snow blindness, I'm sure. It happens to people that climb really tall mountains. Well, there's a reason. It's because that sun reflecting off of the snow gets very bright. You might not necessarily know it until you're done with your little adventure outside. And then you get back and you're like, wow, I'm seeing stars a little bit. Sunglasses. I have sunglasses year round when I'm out. You know, if the sun's out, I'm wearing sunglasses. Yeah, it's a good idea to protect.
Well, and if it's reflecting off the snow, you're almost getting double from the sky and from the ground.
Correct.
Yeah. I remember my brother one time coming back from a hike in Rocky Mountain after some snow with really red eyes, and you know, he was in a bad way for a little bit.
Yeah. Can be dangerous, yeah.
How about maybe not so much being on a trail or something like that, but if you're in the neighborhood, sidewalks, things like that, gear for safety, either lights or reflective gear. We have a limited amount of sunlight in the winter. What kind of lighting is available, again, to show your way, show your path, but also to be reflective if there are cars or other people coming your way?
Yeah. So, you know, there's plenty of reflectivity vests that are out there, and I'm sure you can find them at, you know, Walmart and Target and, you know, stores like that. But there are plenty of those kind of things that you can just kind of throw on over all of your clothes. They make them big enough that it's just kind of like this one big vest that kind of, it's usually mesh and it has reflective strips on it. And it allows cars, when they have their headlights on, when they are driving up to you or near you, they'll be able to see you a lot easier. And usually these things are bright yellow or bright orange as well. So, but also headlamps, I think, are important. Headlamps are great not only for you to see, but for others to see you. Headlamps are one thing that we have as a family. Sarah, myself, my kids, we're out there with headlamps at night when we're walking the dogs. If it's early morning and she's out for a run when she's training, she has a headlamp on. So it's really super important to have a headlamp. If you don't want to wear a headlamp because you feel like it's uncomfortable or whatever, just a handheld flashlight. And there's plenty of them that are small enough. You don't have to have a big mag, you know, heavy metal flashlight. They have plenty of small handhelds that are nice and light. But again, it helps others see you and helps guide your way as well. Well, so
a friend of mine takes her flashlight, lighter one, off her bicycle.
Yeah.
And kind of uses that. So it's really powerful and potent, but it's light enough to be held in the hand.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, it works out really well for her. How about trekking poles? It's something that I use year round, but if your footing isn't, you know, quite as secure, you know, given snow or ice or things like that, I would think that they could come in even handier.
Yeah, trekking poles are becoming more and more popular by people of all ages, to be honest with you, because there's this level of stability and security you get with trekking poles. And the idea is that it's going to help balance you in those situations of maybe having some uneven terrain or some tricky terrain that you're trying to get over. It will help balance you. Where I find the most benefit from trekking poles is really coming downhill, especially if you're out there for a while and your legs are getting tired, and maybe it's at the end of the day and you've gone uphill, now you're going downhill. Most of the injuries out there that can happen are usually because you're tired. And trekking poles are going to help take some of the strain or the stress off of your legs, especially coming downhill. So you're going to be planting those trekking poles out in front of you. And obviously your arms are going to help take some of that impact as you're stepping down, coming down that slope or that hill that you're on. So we're starting to sell a lot more trekking poles than we ever have, because I think people are seeing the benefit and the value in them.
So we've talked about a whole lot of different gear.
Yeah.
How does one determine how much to spend? Because things from a cost standpoint are all over the board.
Yeah.
How do you help people determine that?
Yeah, so at the end of the day, my feeling on it is quality, right? You want to find something that is a good piece of gear that's going to last you a long time. If you just went out to a big box store and you bought a cheap pair of hiking boots or a cheap headlamp or a cheap whatever, that kind of stuff doesn't last as long. It usually breaks down. It usually fails. It usually doesn't have really good features. And sometimes it's really just not going to fit that well either. So yes, you can save money, but it's really not going to do what I think you're setting out for it to do. Good quality gear is important. Yes, you might spend a little bit more on it, but what I suggest to people is you don't have to buy all this stuff at once, you know? Get something or get a couple things and start building this over time as you need it. And as you find that when I'm out there, I wish I had this thing, then you get it. Yeah. So you go through and you start to edit, you know, what you're looking for and what your need is based upon maybe just going out and having some, you know, small adventures in your local area. And you're like, you know what, I really wish I had this thing. Then go out and get that thing. You don't have to get everything at first and spend thousands of dollars, because maybe you don't need some of that stuff ultimately, or maybe that stuff doesn't really apply to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I always suggest kind of working your way through it and gradually picking up things here and there.
Well, yeah. I also think back to the saying, pay for quality and you only cry once.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Because
right.
You're not buying something over and over again. But considering there is a little bit more of an investment in some of this good quality gear, I would think that being able to shop in person and get the expertise of a local retailer or a local expert like yourself and your staff would be so much more important than trying to buy things online or going to a big box store where there's no one there to help you.
Oh, yeah. And we've all bought something online, many things online, and had to return those things many, many times. It just is part and parcel of our lives, right? But where you can avoid that, where you have a local shop and you can go in and you can speak to somebody who has knowledge of the product and can educate you and can walk you through the process, is super important in my opinion. Like, you, it's once and done. You know, you don't get this thing in the mail, then have to turn around and send it back out. And maybe you have to go to a UPS store or something to drop it off. You have to make an extra trip. You can avoid all of that by making one trip to your local store and really getting a good education on this stuff and getting what you need the first time. And you're going to figure out that, oh, it fits because I tried it on. It feels good because I walked around in it. The backpack fits because they fit it specifically for me. So there are all of these things that, in my opinion, point to going to a good local gear shop and having them help you through the process. And does it take a little more time than sitting on your computer and ordering a thing and getting it? Yeah. It will, but ultimately the experience is better.
Yeah. Quickly, what was your worst winter weather experience and what gear did you have to make it through?
Oh, putting me on the spot. I don't know that I've had I don't perceive them as bad winter weather experiences. I don't know. I mean, I climbed Mount Whitney years ago. It was probably back in 2010. And I worked for the North Face at the time. So I had gear. I had good gear. So I was relatively comfortable. It was really just the conditions at the end of the day. So we went in April. There was still a lot of snowpack. We were doing what's called post-holing the whole time, which is you would step on soft snow and your leg would sink all the way in. And you're carrying about a 50-pound pack and you have crampons on and you have trekking poles. And now you got to pull your whole body with this pack out of the snow and get going again. And then maybe you do it again. And it was just, you know, it was a slow slog. But, you know, looking back on it, for me, it was a good story to tell. It was never like, oh, that was like the worst winter experience, you know. Yeah. I love the winter. And we get out all the time. We try to ski. I go dipping in the Delaware River every Sunday throughout the entire winter with friends. I love it. I think bring it on. Bring on the cold. Bring on the nasty. I want snow. I want a lot of snow. And I know most people don't hold that same, you know, that same opinion, but I'm maybe the wrong person to ask that question to.
And Adam, where can people find you on the web and social?
Yeah, so we are eastonoutdoorcompany.com. That's our website. And we are at Easton Outdoor Company for both Facebook and Instagram. And yeah, we're in downtown Easton. We're right in the heart of downtown Easton, just off the circle. So.
Great. Well, Adam, thanks for joining us here at WDIY and sharing your knowledge to give our listeners maybe a little bit more encouragement to get out in the winter and get the right things to keep them warm and dry.
Yeah, thank you. This has been great.
And again, we thank our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network who encourage us to be happy, healthy, and active. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, and this is Active Lehigh Valley.